A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we will continue. We supposed to have a evening chanting. Then after that, we may not have time for the sitting because the dinner has taken up too much time. Then the rest also. Too much time. So now we got only 15 minutes of evening chanting. Maybe what I will do is, instead of doing the evening chanting, maybe I will just do some sharing and reflection with you all. So turn to the retreat chanting book. Retreat chanting book. Okay, turn to page 43. The discourse on Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Turn to page 43. Okay, now I will read to you. All beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of Anatta. Here they still translate as non-self, which provides measureless deliverance from self-belief and self-perception. So they are more interested in non-self. Because this sutta, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha used the five aggregate of form and mind and developed the understanding of what non-self is. That's why here they translate Anatta as non-self. But actually it's more than that. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. Then the sutta says, as taught by the Supreme Sammasambuddha, this teaching is given so that those who meditate on experienceable realities may arrive at perfect comprehension. It is for the development of perfect understanding of this phenomena and for the investigation of all defiled mind moments. The consequence of this practice is total deliverance. So desirous of bringing this teaching forth with its great benefit, let us now recite the sutta. So the solo introduction up there, I think, is developed by Wat Pannanachat, the Western disciple. So it may not be so accurate. But never mind, we go into the sutta, which is more important. So in the sutta, it's mentioned, thus have I heard, at one time, the Blessed One was dwelling near Benares at Isipatana, within the deer park. There he addressed the group of five bhikkhu, or the five ascetics that were with him earlier on. So he told them, form, bhikkhu, is non-self. If bhikkhu form was self, then form would not lead to affliction. And one might be able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But since bhikkhu form is non-self, form therefore leads to affliction. And one is not able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. Means, like we explained to our understanding, this physical body of ours, the physical form, goes the way of nature. It's not a permanent unchanging entity, it's dependent originating, condition arising. That's why you cannot deludedly grasp onto it, cling onto it, and say, this is me, this is I. So the other word that they use is, if form is self, that word self is very important. That's why in the sutta is mentioned, he repeated, he said, feeling is non-self. If bhikkhu feeling was self, feeling would not lead to affliction. Because if it's you can command it. Don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. Likely your feeling also same. I only want pleasant feeling. Don't arise the unpleasant feeling. But all these are dependent originating. Not a permanent unchanging entity. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't listen to you. It's non-self. It's not you. That's why if it's you can command it. Understand? That it will not tend towards affliction or suffering. So he repeat for perception, mental formation, consciousness. Then after that, he asked the monk, what do you think, bhikkhu? Is form permanent or impermanent? Then they replied, impermanent, Lord, where they can see how it goes the way of nature. But is that which is impermanent painful or pleasurable? The answer is obvious, isn't it? Painful, Lord, they said. But is it fit to consider that which is impermanent, painful, and of the nature to change? As this is me, I am this, and this is self. That's why they answer, it is not, Lord. Then they repeat for the others. Feeling, perception, then consciousness, mental formation and consciousness. Yeah, sankhara. And consciousness. Then after that, he asks, what do you think about this, bhikkhu? Is consciousness permanent or impermanent? Of course, they reply, impermanent. Yeah. Then he repeat, is it fit to consider that which is impermanent, painful, and of the nature to change, as this is mine, I am this, and this is self or myself? No. But the better one will be Sakkaya Ditti, that condition, delusion, self-delusion. You should have the understanding, because it's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you cannot cling on to it, hold on to it and say, this is self, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. Because it's not a permanent unchanging entity. You cannot hold on to that. Then the Buddha summarized, he said, therefore, bhikkhu, whatever form that is past, future or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, whether it is far or near, all form should by means of right wisdom be seen as it is, as it really is. Thus, this is not me, I am not this, this is not self. Then he repeat for all the other aggregates of feeling, perceptions, sankhara and vijnana. Then in the second last paragraph, the Buddha say, seeing in this way, the bhikkhu, the wise noble disciple, becomes disenchanted with form, becomes disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, becomes disenchanted with mental formation and consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, their passion fade away. With the fading away of passion, their heart is liberated. And with liberation, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. And they know, destroy is birth. The holy life has been lived out. Done is what it has to be done. There is no more coming into any state of being. Thus spoke the Blessed One. Delighted, the group of five bhikkhu rejoiced in what the Lord had said. Moreover, while this discourse was being delivered, the mind of the five bhikkhu or ascetic were free from defilement through clinging to none. Actually, they all become arahant because the first sutta was the Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta, the first sermon. After that was delivered, only Kondanya developed the understanding and became a sotapan. Then the Buddha followed with this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Then all of them become enlightened. The reason why it is possible is because the understanding is the five aggregate of form and mind is impermanent. They go the way of nature. They follow the Pancha Niyama. You want things your way, you suffer. That's why the characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering is very obvious. Yeah. Then after that, what happened is the Buddha used the five analogy to let the bhikkhu understand that this five aggregate of form and mind not only is impermanent, it's also not a permanent unchanging entity where you can deludedly cling on to, grasp onto, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all these are mine. In actual fact, none of this is a permanent unchanging entity. That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, or they call it the Sutta or discourse on the characteristics of non-self. Here the English translation is not so good. Yeah. Because the way it's worded is not clear. Yeah. In fact, there is another version which I saw in the early days. A very thin book. Yeah. I think that translation was better. Well, that translation actually explained a lot of things. Yeah. He said, if form is self, means this physical body is you, belong to you, then you can command it and tell it not to get old, not to grow old, get sick and die. But because you cannot. That's why he said, form has this problem. It is non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. If it's self, it will not tend towards suffering. You understand or not? Then feeling is the same. If feeling is you, self, then it will not tend towards suffering. Because when feeling arises, when unpleasant feeling arises, you feel the suffering, understand not? Then when feeling transform from pleasant to unpleasant, it is a characteristic of impermanent. And when it transform, it change from pleasant to unpleasant, you didn't die. You didn't die means what? It is not you, understand not? That's why in that sense, through my meditative understanding, I came to understand it very clearly. Form go the way of nature. It has the unique characteristic of impermanent, via its dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. If it's me, if it's really a permanent unchanging entity, then it will not tend towards suffering. Then he repeat for all the other aggregates of mind. So when I saw it in my awareness meditation, I realized feeling come and go, I didn't die. Perception arise and pass away, I didn't die. Sankara arise and pass away, I didn't die. consciousness arise and pass away. I didn't die. So how can that aggregates of mind, the four aggregates, feeling, perception, sankhara, and consciousness, be me? Understand or not? If it's not me, then how come they arise in me? That was the inquiry I developed. Yeah. So we cannot deny that this five aggregates of form and mind, initially before you have the wisdom, you may think it's you, understand or not? Like I say, you want it to laugh, it laugh. You want to run, you run. You want to walk, you walk. You want to do whatever you can. So you believe you can control it. Ability to control doesn't mean it's yours, understand? Like the car. You can maneuver it, control it. You want to speed up, you want to brake, you want to turn or do whatever that is within this design, you can. But it doesn't mean it's you, because these are all conditioned arising state. Any of the causes and conditions not there, like the car, it cannot run already. You put in a Formula One driver also, it cannot run already. Like the physical body, physical form, it's the same. So when I look at it, I reflected on it, then I realized all this is impermanent, because they come, they go. And it cannot be me, because when they come and go, when they arise and disappear, I didn't die. Then the inquiry is, I have to understand, if they are not me, why did they arise in me? Then who am I? What am I? That's why after that, I developed the pure awareness nature, then I observe. Then true enough, exactly like what the Buddha mentioned, all my mind state, they are dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. Then I reflected on the physical form. Same, it goes the way of nature. It's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, grab onto and say, forever remain young. Don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. But it can't, because this is not you. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. Then I saw everything follow the nature's law, the universal order of the Pancha Niyama. That's why from there, I came to the realization that this form and mind is not me. Then because of the karmic conditioning, everything, I also come to realize this one is karmically conditioned out for my nature to come to this existential world, to live life, to fulfill its vow, to go through the karmic process, and to do what you want with this vehicle and tool. That's why from there, my nature penetrated this deep meaning of anatta. Means anatta is not only not non-self, or it is not self. Means that thing exists, but not real, not what you think. And you cannot own it, you cannot possess it, and you cannot hold on to it or cling on to it, because they are dependent originating, condition arising. And the condition will manifest this way. Exactly like what the Buddha has actually taught us. Whatever arises, there are causes and conditions. So when you start to see this, then you understand. Then when I look at the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, I realize what the Buddha meant was different. He said, is the physical body self? Yeah. Then he told the monk, if it's self, it will obey you, understand? It will not tend towards suffering. That one easy to understand, isn't it? Then he applied to all the other aggregates. Then after that, he said, this physical body, is it permanent or impermanent? Then they realize it's impermanent. And he said, that which is impermanent and having the characteristics of impermanent, is it pleasurable or painful? It's obvious, isn't it? Because it is dependent originating, condition arising. So it's painful. That's why you have to experience old age, sickness and death. You have to go through the reality of life and existence. Then after that, he came out with the final conclusion. He said, that which tends towards suffering and impermanent and develop all the whatever painful condition when it arises, is it right for you to say this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine? Then the monk, all the five ascetics, suddenly like wake up, you know, because nobody have explained this to them, because they take for granted that this body is so real, and the aggregates are like, the feeling is real, it's me, perception is real, the thought is real, there's a thinker behind the thought. But all these are Sakkaya Ditti. That's why from there, the bhikkhu, they came to that clear understanding. They answered, no, no way. Because this form, feeling, perception, sankhara and vijnanam, they are just the aggregates that arise and pass away, dependent, originating. So if they tend towards suffering, how can it be you? How can it be a permanent unchanging entity? That's why they see the delusion. Then not only that, is it? That thing is dependent originating, that's why it is impermanent. It keeps on evolving and change according to condition it arises. When condition cease to be, it cease to be. That's why this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is a very powerful sutta to give you penetrative insight to realize that this is not you. So from my own meditative understanding and realization, I add in this part. Just like I already told you, this physical body, yeah, this feeling, this perception, sankhara and vijnanam, is it you? Then I show you, when it arise and pass away, especially feeling, you didn't die. So how can it be you? Then similarly for the other mind state. Then this physical body is only element, understand? Go the way of nature. How can it be you? There is no consciousness. And the consciousness that is trapped inside is not you. It's a separate entity, karmically conditional. That's why from there, you realize the five aggregate of form and mind, they are impermanent, tends towards suffering. That's why it cannot be you. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. And that delusion just evaporated. The understanding transformed. So hopefully this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, when you really develop the meditative understanding through the awareness-based meditation, you will see it very clearly. Then that Sakkaya Ditti or self-delusion will be rooted out there and then, gone. Yeah. Then whoever come and tell you after you die what happened, or say, you know, this person don't understand. Yeah, basically, this is not you, understand? No. What is death? Who died? What died? Just somebody asked you, isn't it? You know what is death or not? Separation of the consciousness from the form, when the causes and condition no more. When the three supporting conditions that manifest the living being cease to be. Then, that living being cease to be. That's why you say die. Actually, no one die. It's just separation of the physical with the consciousness. And why the physical must separate? Because the organ, they already no more performing the function. Then the consciousness that is trapped inside cannot stay there already. because the organ all break down already, it cannot give rise to consciousness anymore. Then the most important one is the life force, your karmic force, that trigger of the life force that pump your heart. So like, as you have studied in the law of karma, the Buddha mentioned there is a destructive karma. When destructive karma come, the life force cut off. And that's how. When life force cut out, what happened to you? Your heart cannot pump. And that's how. When your heart cannot pump, your heart cannot deliver the blood to nourish all the organ, everything. That's why it will fail. So either the karmic force no more, then this random of consciousness inside will separate because it cannot pump and the organ all fail. Or when the karmic force is still there, the life force is still there, but you may have a disease, terminal, the vital organ fail. Then this consciousness also cannot be supported, cannot stay there. A better example would be, let's say you develop heart attack, anasana, the heart failure. So even the life force is still there, but the heart, the muscle or that trigger of the heart attack has failed, collapsed. That's why that consciousness also have to leave, cannot stay inside. Yeah. So either the physical body develops the inability to support the consciousness, then it's separate. Or this life force, which is the main driving force for life or existence, has been cut off. So it's like a candlelight. Candlelight. You think your candle is so long, the light, you like it, it will maybe burn for so long. But sometimes not necessary, isn't it? When the wind come, blow the candle, it's like your life force cut off. Understand? Then sometimes the wick and the wax that are the condition for the candle to burn is having defect, and the wick sometimes after halfway it burns, then the flame go off, because there is problem with that thing. So any of these can lead to the so-called death process or cessation of that phenomena. The other one is when the wax all fully burn out, means you live the full life, no destructive karma in between, and no accident, nothing, the organ all sustain until time to die. So these are the causes and conditions that manifest. Then when they cease to be, they cease. So that being, the five aggregate of form of mind, or in our case, the living being, is not a permanent unchanging entity, it's not you. That's why no one die, nothing die. What they call death is separation of the consciousness from the form. And to the doctor is no more heartbeat, all your organs fail already. They say you die already. That's why they got an instrument to measure your heartbeat. Once that one become a straight line, I don't know how you create that sound. No more vibration, no more up and down. And that's how it become a straight line. Means life has ended. So all this understanding will help if you develop the awareness within. Then you realize this form and mind is not you. It's dependent originating, condition arising. It is impermanent, tends to a suffering. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. And this understanding is most important. Hopefully you can follow. That's why this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, you have gone through it. There's another version which is better. I didn't have a chance to share with you because that book, in the early 80s, I got the book. That one described it quite well. I try to look for it. Then if I can find, maybe I share with you all. So we end this. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Now 7:30 already. Oh, we have to start our Dhamma sharing and Q&A already. Means we don't have time even for meditation. Eh? 30 minutes of sitting meditation. I see how I can adjust this. Yeah? Hmm. Maybe I put the meditation somewhere else. Eh? Because of the dinner 6:30, it actually gives us some problem. Okay, don't worry, I look at it, then I will come out with the new, maybe, itinerary, eh? Or the new, you call this one? Agenda or what? Huh? No, all this that I have scheduled for you, you call them what? Program. Program. I have to adjust the program. Because otherwise we don't have enough time. Our evening session become very short. We are after dinner, 7 o'clock already. And by the time you have meditation and chanting, you're supposed to rest already. Yeah. Okay, now we continue. Yeah. Q&A. Page 34. Let me continue.
Part 2. Meditation. 2.1. Visualization technique. Question 1. Can visualization, like visualizing a blue sky, be used as a technique to develop mindfulness? Father Chia replied, this type of visualization technique, like any other skillful means, if used with understanding, can also bring about the training of the mind to be peaceful and calm, just like auto-suggestion via music, sound and vibration, etc. But the disadvantage of this type of skillful means is that it usually only works for the first few times, and after a while, like good food, it loses its effectiveness. The other type of visualization technique using kasina, or the 40 objects of meditation, used to develop one-pointedness concentration, followed by the development of jhanas and deep concentration, leading to all the other psychic abilities, is more dangerous unless it is done with understanding and preferably under the guidance of a very good and very skillful meditation teacher. If one clings and attached to such one-pointedness concentration and special jhanic abilities, then one can get trapped and chances of deviation from the true cultivation of developing wisdom to free the mind from all suffering can happen. The mind that is in one-pointedness concentration is a conditioned mind that is still within the field of thoughts, and all the anusaya or latent tendencies of the mind are still suppressed and not rooted out as yet. Such a mind is not a free mind with clear awareness and samadhi born of equanimity or wisdom. 2.2. The wisdom of let things be. Question 2. How to apply the wisdom of let things be to solve all of our life problems? Brother Teo said, with right view born of wisdom to accept the reality of the moment, we will not react or allow the mind to stir when confronted with the first noble truth realities of life and existence, the 8 conditions. Hence no fear, no worry and anxiety or any suffering. That is, we just let things be after accepting the realities of the moment. Then with a calm and clear mind, we can weigh our options and act appropriately following the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, to resolve all our life situations or problems amicably, i.e. without any negativity or wrong thoughts to cause our mind to stir. we can be at peace because wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition one's fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness and misery, etc. Without wisdom and right view, born of understanding the Buddha Dharma, one will react and the mind will stir due to the fear, worry and anxiety, etc. Born of their worry views, their wrong views. Just like normal deluded living beings leading to all the mental sufferings, grief, sorrow and lamentation, etc. The cause of suffering is self-delusion that condition one's grasping and one's clinging to one's five aggregates of form and mind. This is the second noble truth. Under the third noble truth, the Buddha said, suffering need not be. If one has the wisdom and enlightenment can be realized in the here and the now, or Nibbana is possible. Then following the fourth noble truth, which is the way out of suffering, one cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, leading to the end of all suffering. Sixth Heart Sutta Class 1.1 Opening Commentary on the Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutra. The Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta with verse without a strand, a stand and prose commentary consists of three parts. 1. The sutra text itself. 2. The Venerable Master Xuanhua's verse explanation. And 3. The Master's lectured commentary on the text and verses. This Heart Sutta is an essential summary of the Mahayana Buddhism teaching on true emptiness. The Heart Sutra is nothing less than a summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. It distills perfectly the teaching of non-attachment, which is the doctrine of emptiness. As the Venerable Master Xuanhua says in his commentary, only the most advanced of masters can expect to grasp the full importance of the sutra by itself without the aid of a teacher, because this teaching is the heart in the heart within the heart. Brother Tier also concurs with Master Xuanhua's statement and also said, Dharma must be delivered from the heart spontaneously and not through any prior planning via memory. Otherwise, it is only knowledge and not wisdom. The important criteria for translating the Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta as adopted by Master Xuanhua are the eight guidelines of his Buddhist text translation.
This one not important. You can skip because it's their guideline. So we go to part 2, 2.1, Angulimala Sutta.
2.1 Angulimala Sutta, MN 86, translated from the Pali text by Thanissaro Bhikkhu.
MN is Majjhika Nikaya, the middle length.
Thus have I heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi at Jetha Grove Anathapindika Monastery, and at that time, in King's Pasanadi's reign, there was a bandit named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He turned villages into non-villages, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wore a garland, mala, made of fingers, anguli. Then the Blessed One, early in the morning, having put on his robes and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savatthi for alms. Having wandered for alms in Savatthi and returning from his alms round after his meal, he set his lodging in order. Carrying his robes and bow, he went along the road to where Angulimala was staying. Cowherds, shepherds, and farmers saw him going along the road to where Angulimala was staying, and on seeing him said to him, "Don't go along that road, contemplative, for on that road is Angulimala, the brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned villages into non-villages, town into non-town, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hand. When this was said, the Blessed One kept going in silence. A second time and third time, cowherds, shepherds, and farmers said to the Blessed One, "Don't go along that road, contemplative." Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hand. When this was said, the Blessed One kept going in silence. Then Angulimala saw the Blessed One coming from afar, and on seeing him, this thought occurs to him. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along this road, and even they have fallen into my hands. And yet now this contemplative comes attacking, as it were alone and without a companion. Why don't I kill him? So Angulimala, taking up his sword and shield, buckling on his bow and quiver, followed right behind the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One wielded a feat of psychic power such that Angulimala, though running with all his might, could not catch up with the Blessed One, walking at normal pace. Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? In the past, I've chased and seized even a swift-running elephant, a swift-running horse, a swift-running chariot, a swift-running deer, but now even though I'm running with all my might, I can't catch up with this contemplative walking at normal pace." So he stopped and called out to the Blessed One, "Stop, contemplative, stop. I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped." Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "These Sakyan contemplatives are speakers of the truth, asserter of the truth, and yet this contemplative, even while walking, says, 'I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped. Why don't I question him?'" So Angulimala, the bandit, addressed this verse to the Blessed One, "While walking, contemplative, you say, 'I have stopped.' But when I have stopped, you say, 'I haven't.' I ask you the meaning of this. How have you stopped? How haven't I?" The Buddha said, "I have stopped, Angulimala, once and for all. Having cast off violence towards all living beings, you are still unrestrained towards beings. That's how I've stopped and you haven't," Angulimala said. "At long last, a greatly revered great seer for my sake has come to the great forest. Having heard your verse in line with the Dhamma, I will also abandon all evil." So saying, the bandit hurled his sword and weapon over a cliff into a chasm, a pit. Then the bandit paid homage to the feet of the one well gone, and right there requested the going forth. The awakened one, the compassionate great seer, the teacher of the world, along with his devas, said to him then, "Come, bhikkhu." That in itself was bhikkhuhood for him. Then the Blessed One set out wandering towards Savatthi with Venerable Angulimala as his attendant monk. After wandering by stages, he reached Savatthi, and there he lived near Savatthi in Jetta Grove, Anathapindika Monastery. Now at that time, a large crowd of people, loud and noisy, had gathered at the gates of King Pasanadi Kosala's inner palace, calling out, "There is a bandit in your reign, sire, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-villages, town into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. The king must stamp him out." Then King Pasanadi Kosala, with a cavalry of roughly 500 horsemen drove out of Savati and entered the monastery, driving as far as the ground was passable for chariots. He got down from his chariot and went on foot to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down, he sat on one side. As he was sitting there, the Blessed One said to him, "What is it, great king? Has King Saniya Bimbisara of Magadha provoked you? Or had the Lachavis of Visali or some other hostile king?" "No, Lord, King Saniya Bimbisara of Magadha hasn't provoked me, nor have the Lachavis of Visali, nor has some other hostile king. There is a bandit in my reign, Lord, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-villages, town into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. I'm going to stamp him out. Great king, suppose you were to see Angulimala with his hair and beard shaved off, wearing the robes, having gone forth from the home life into homelessness, refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking what is not given, refraining from telling lies, living the holy life on one meal a day, virtues of a fine character, what would you do to him?" "We would bow down to him, Lord, or rise up to greet him, or offer him a seat, or offer him robes, alms food, lodging, or medicinal requisites for curing illness, or we would arrange a lawful guard, protection and defense. But how could there be such virtue and restraint in an unvirtuous evil character?" Now at that time, Venerable Angulimala was sitting not far from the Blessed One. So the Blessed One pointed with his right arm, said to King Pasanadi Kosala, "That great king is Angulimala." Then King Pasanadi Kosala was frightened, terrified, his hair standing up and standing on ends. So the Blessed One, sensing the king's fear and hair raising awe, said to him, "Don't be afraid, great king, don't be afraid. He poses no danger to you." Then the king's fear, his terror, his hair standing on end subsided. He went over to Venerable Angulimala and said, "Are you really Angulimala, Lord?" "Yes, great king. What is your father's clan? What is your mother's clan?" "My father is Gaga, great king, and my mother is Mantani." "Then may Master Gaga Mantaniputta delight in staying here. I will be responsible for your robes, alms food, lodging and medicinal requisites for curing illness." Now it so happens that at that time, Venerable Angulimala was a wilderness dweller, an alms goer, wearing one set of the triple robes made of cast off cloth. So he said to King Pasanadi Kosala, "Enough, great king, my triple robes is complete." So King Pasanadi Kosala went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "It's amazing, Lord, it's astounding, how the Blessed One has tamed the untamed, pacified the unpeaceful, and brought to unbinding those who were not unbound. For what we could not tame even with blood and blade weapon, the Blessed One has tamed without blood or blade weapon. Now, Lord, we must go. Many are our duties, many are our responsibilities. Then do, great king, what you think it is now time to do." Then King Pasanadi Kosala got up from his seat, bowed down to the Blessed One, and keeping him on his right, departed. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robe and carried his outer robe and bow, went into Savati for alms. As he was going from house to house for alms, he saw a woman suffering a breech birth. On seeing her, the thought occurs to him, how tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings. Then, having wandered for alms in Sabati and returning from his alms round after his meal, he went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to him, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "Just now, Lord, early in the morning, having put on my robes and carrying my outer robes and bowl, I went into Sabati for alms. As I was going from house to house for alms, I saw a woman suffering a breech burst. On seeing her, the thought occurs to me, how tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings. In that case, Angulimala, go to that woman and on arrival say to her, 'Sister, since I was born, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' But Lord, wouldn't that be a lie for me? For I have intentionally killed many living beings. Then in that case, Angulimala, go to that woman and on arrival say to her, 'Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' Responding, 'As you say, Lord,' to the Blessed One, Angulimala went to that woman and on arrival said to her, 'Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' And there was well-being for the woman, well-being for her fetus. Then Venerable Angulimala, dwelling alone, secluded, heedful, ardent, and resolute, in no long time reached and remained in the supreme goal of the holy life for which clansmen rightly go forth from home to homelessness, knowing and realizing it for himself in the here and now. He knew birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for the sake of this world, and thus Venerable Angulimala became another one of the Arahants. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robe and carrying his outer robe and bowl, went into Sabati for alms. Now at that time, a cloud thrown by one person hit Venerable Angulimala on the body. A stone thrown by another person hit him on the body. And a potsherd thrown by still another person hit him on the body. So Venerable Angulimala, his head broken open and dripping with blood, his bow broken and his outer robe ripped to shreds, went to the Blessed One. The Blessed One saw him coming from afar and on seeing him said to him, 'Bear with it, Brahmin, bear with it. The fruit of the karma that would have burned you in hell for many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years, you are now experiencing in the here and now.' Then Venerable Angulimala, having gone alone into seclusion, experienced the bliss of release. At that time, he exclaimed, 'Who once was heedless but later is not, brightened the world like the moon set free from the cloud. His evil done deed is replaced with skillfulness. He brightens the world like the moon set free from the cloud. Whatever a young monk devotes himself to the Buddha's binding, he brightens the world like the moon set free from the cloud.'"
So this Angulimala Sutta is chosen at that time because there was a question by one Kayamita. He said, how can a person like Angulimala, so violent, so cruel, so like without any consideration for living being and life, he just go out and kill? So what happened was, in the sutta, it seems he has a teacher, you know, who actually, because of some jealousy or what, develop the unhappy mind towards him, no? So he actually played him out, no? He told him, but Angulimala got a lot of faith. He said, you go and hunt. You can collect, was it 1,000? 1,000 finger. Kill and take the finger. That's why Angulimala. So mala is a garland. So because of that, he went around and do all this until nobody dared to go there. Then finally, it seems, if I'm not wrong, I remember in Ona Sutta, before the Buddha go that direction, his mother was supposed to be the last one that he's supposed to kill to fulfill the 1,000 finger. But before he can do it, he saw the Buddha contemplative one arrive. So he said, oh, how wonderful, amazing. He said, not only I no need to kill my mother, I can go after him. And he come alone now, he said. Last time, in group of 10, 20, 30, 40 or so, cannot match him. So that was the story. So what happened was, after he met the Buddha, it's like meant to be. But the Buddha normally survey the world in the morning before he goes out for Pinnapata. But that day, after he surveyed the world, he knew after the Pinnapata, he rested. Then he decided to go there because he know there is condition for him to make Angulimala transform and become a monk and finally realize Arantaship. So this Angulimala actually also cultivated a bright guy, but because of past karma, he entangled with this teacher that out of jealousy advised him wrongly. So what happened was, despite killing 999, because the Buddha, he didn't manage to kill. The Kaimita want to know, how can a person like him become enlightened, not only Sotapanasi or Sakadagami or Anagami, become an arahant? No? So what is your understanding? This one is a real sutta, no? Not fairy tale, no? So what is your understanding? That's why he wants to know. So we extracted this sutta and we share it. But do you know, all this is like meant to be. That's why when the Buddha surveyed the world, he knew. He decided to help. That's why he created like psychic ability. Until Angulimala feels something is not right. How can this contemplative, which is a monk, so weak, can outrun him? No? Didn't run, actually, he walked at normal pace. Then he knew already, not right already. Then he heard that this Sakya, Sakyamuni Buddha, is a Sakyan from the Sakyan family, and he speak the truth. No? So he said, why not I ask him? Yeah. Then he called out to him, stop! He said. Then the Buddha stopped. Then Angulimala, you know, panting. After trying all his might to follow up, come. Then the Buddha replied, I have stopped long ago. It is you who never stop. Then he cannot understand, no. While I was chasing you, you were walking so far and you say you have stopped. Yeah. And when I stop, you say I haven't stopped. That's why he become like confused. So the Buddha replied, he said, I have stopped killing and harming people long, long ago. That's why I have stopped. But you still have that mental intention to kill, to be so violent and all those things. That's why he said, you have not stopped. Then Angulimala been not really deluded to that sense, realize that the Sakya contemplative never lie, speak the truth. And he dare to say that to him means he is somebody who is like sent to help him understand, to develop the understanding. That's why he straight away requests to be admitted to the order and to follow Sakyamuni Buddha. So when he did that, the Buddha actually agreed and took him in. Then he also came to realize the way of killing and harming is not the correct way. That's why he has faith. That's why he go for. And because of his past, he was able to develop all the understanding and finally become an Arahant. But before he became an Arahant, he helped a pregnant lady who was giving birth with problem, breach. So the Buddha taught him to invoke power of truth. That's why since the day he understand and enter the order, he has never killed and harmed. By the power of that truth, may you be well and happy. May the child too be well and happy. May no harm come to them. And also, that's why after that, the power of merits, the power of truth, manifests the nature's law to actually bring about a peaceful birth. That's why after that, it seems the Angulimala Sutta become very famous. Every time people got problem in delivering or having good birth, or what they call a smooth sailing type of birth, they will advise you to get the monk to chant the Angulimala Sutta. So all these are Jataka story. So more important is to understand that no matter what you do in that life, if you have the understanding, the parami, you can also become enlightened, no problem. So don't give up. Don't go and have the thought and idea, ayo, I committed so much evil, I did so much killing, I deceived and cheat so many. The Mahayana have a famous saying, how you recite it in Mandarin. Apa masri nara? Apa masri da? Fang xia tu tao. Huh? Ain't be there. Fang xia tu tao. Li ti shen fo. If you can really turn around and put down that aggressive killing, means tu tao is what? The sword. Is it a very heavy sword or what? Tu tao is what? What is tu? What is the meaning of tu? Oh, tu lou tao, to kill people. Oh, tu tao. Immediately you can become a Buddha. That's, like I say, enlightenment and delusion is what? The flip of the thumb, the palm, understand? The moment you understand, you allow that deluded thought, the evil thought, to actually relinquish. You're willing to change over to a new life. Then you can even become a Buddha, not to say Arahant. So this will give cultivator of the way faith. People with so much karmic negativity also can become Arahant. So this is a very good Jataka story where people can develop the faith, confidence and understanding that the Dhamma can be cultivated by anyone. It's not too late, understand? So when you have the understanding, things can arise, manifest, and it can give rise to karmic conditioning that is so like unbelievable. Okay, we continue. This one is interesting. Pain in the leg during meditation. This is the one that I explained to you just now. You tired or not? Tell me. Better get in Man Yuan to take over for a while. I saw his chi, right? Not so strong already. Okay, Man Yuan.
3.1 Pain in the legs during meditation. Question 1. While sitting in half lotus for some time, the pain of the leg becomes unbearable. And then, when I start to chant, the original pain ceases, but a more severe pain arises in another part of the legs. Why?
You see, got Kayamita who asked this type of question. No? You think easy to become teacher. So how you going to answer him? You listen to the answer.
Brother Teo answered, first, you must understand what meditation is and what are you doing in the name of meditation, your purpose and intent. If you don't have such an understanding, then there is this tendency to react to unpleasant feeling or sensation that arises during meditation by labeling it as pain, which is an aversion or an ill will. And as we all know, ill will is one of the 5 mental hindrances of the mind that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and calm. As such, you are already caught or trapped by it. Because of your dislike towards such unpleasant sensation, your mind will try to do something else, like chanting, to either suppress it or make it go away. As chanting is just another skillful means to train the mind, and it is still within the field of thoughts, hence, by doing so, you have lost your focus because meditation consists of 2 steps. First, the first step is to develop the training of the mind to be constantly aware, leading to the heedfulness.
Before you continue, just now you came and asked me the question. Is it Brother Wong or another person? Who was the one who... Kwa, is it? Now you listen to this. This one will help you. Because I explained to him that you must have the understanding. That's why you have the understanding. Then you know what to do. Otherwise, you become gullible like other people. Do all these things. But for his case, is he said he's scared. After keep on listening to all my sharing, he even go and listen to my this one, Wu Liang Yi Jing, Sutra of Innumerous Meaning. He's scared he absorbed too much knowledge, become thought-based. There is doubt, there is fear. I say, forget about it. This is analysis, thought telling you. What is important is, did you train your mind to be heedful, mindful? The moment you get it, you will understand. And all this, they are not important. They are the minds, what they call delusion, that come through the back door to haunt you. That's why they create doubt and fear in you. Okay, now you listen. So, the explanation is very important. He said, as chanting is just a skillful means to train the mind and is still within the field of thought, means it's still thought-based. Hence, by doing so, you have lost your focus because meditation consists of 2 parts. Okay, Mayan, read on.
The first step is to develop the training of the mind to be constantly aware, leading to the heedfulness. Then the second step is to use the trained mind to meditate or cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Understanding this will enable you to just silence your mind and patiently relax your body and mind to allow the sensation to be without any like or dislike for that sensation. Because it is the nature of this body to develop that sensation, if you do not know how to relax to enable the qi to flow through the blockage,
then sati will take over, and this can result in a shift of consciousness to cease the so-called pain. So just be aware or mindful of this, to observe what is going on within your form and mind, and to investigate via mindfulness to understand how the movement of mind from one state to another comes to be. That is, to understand how the stirring of mind comes to be and how the mind can be conditioned into negativity, emotions, selfishness, and fear, etc., via delusion upon seeing something or hearing something or thinking of something, etc. 3.2. Five ways to overcome negative, unwholesome thoughts.
You read through quickly because I have covered it. So you listen attentively. Now very easy to understand.
The Buddha teaches five ways to overcome negative, unwholesome thoughts that have arisen. Number one, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. For example, if there is anger, then develop metta, and if there's cruelty, then develop compassion. And if there is fear, develop faith. Number two, think of the consequence of holding on to the unwholesome thoughts or evil roots. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots, which are the roots of all evil, will condition you to become an evil person. For example, anger can condition one into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. Number three, relax and maintain awareness via just let things be. This is the meditative way born of understanding that the natural state of mind before its stirring is already in the meditative state of inner peace, calmness, and silent inner awareness, and the flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought. Number four, trace the origination factors of the unwholesome thought and then retrospectively reverse it via that cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma, Dhammanupassana, i.e. via cultivating the mindfulness of the six internal and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. Five, if all the above four ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha, i.e. with clenched teeth and with your tongue towards your palate, you should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought. 7 Heart Sutra Class 1.1. What is meditation? Brother Teo re-emphasized the importance of understanding the following. Number 1. What is meditation? So that we understand that we are doing in the name what we are doing in the name of meditation, and this will keep us always in focus. 2. There are 2 steps involved in the development of meditation as taught by the Buddha. First step is to train the mind to be heedful via using a skillful means or an object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or mindfulness so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. Second step is to make use of this trained mind in silent awareness to see things as they are, to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the cultivation of the daily mindfulness or sati sampajana, the 4 foundations of mindfulness, the 3 turnings of the 4 noble truths, and the noble eightfold path. 3. The aim of meditation is to realize the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought and beyond time, psychological time, because the Dharma is timeless or akaliko in Pali. 4. Thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thoughts, hence it cannot free our mind and lead it to realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time, because the moments of thought is psychological time. 5. Diligently cultivate the 5 spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya to overcome the 5 hindrances of mind of sensual desire, ill will, slow and torpor, or sleepy, lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. 6. The danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what sakaya ditti or self-delusion is. 7. Importance of using mindfulness to observe and understand how your mind stirs and gets conditioned into mental thinking or activities, leading to all the emotions and reactions to sense experiences that conditions one's suffering, etc. While comprehending the famous Mahayana saying of qi xing dong nian, the arising of mind creates thinking, hence steering of the mind comes to be. Or in the Theravada term, it is avijja panchaya sankara, ignorance conditions activities of mind, the first two links of the paticca samuppada dependent origination. 8. Originally, before the stirring, the mind is already in the meditative state of inner peace, silent and still awareness within. So the stirring of the mind only comes about when we do not have the wisdom and understanding of this fundamental principle of the original or true mind. Then through our own self-delusion or ignorance, we cause our mundane mind to arise, hence the stirring, via our reactions to sense experiences at every moment of sense door consciousness. Train the mind to have the silent inner awareness and clarity to see all this clearly, then there is no more delusion, thereby understanding that if we can just let things be, then there is no more suffering or problem. And with this understanding, tranquility will return by not trying to do anything while using the thought to suppress or control, etc. i.e., just be patient to maintain the silent mind with clear inner awareness and let everything return to its original state before its stirring. Always remember, when there is no delusion or ignorance, then there is no stirring of mind, hence having the understanding that only wisdom frees the mind, i.e., the moment you have wisdom, your mind will not stir, and you are free, so no need to do anything after that, because things are just the way they are, suchness or ta-ta-ta.
So this one is very important, because only wisdom free, always remember that. If you meditate to look for all those fantastic meditation, thinking that that equates to enlightenment, then you are being foolish, deluded. Because without wisdom, you cannot free your mind. Just like even Shen Xiu, he thought that mundane mind is the true mind. He keep on developing mindfulness, polish until it shines, so that no dust can align. Because without understanding, you didn't have the understanding that the mindfulness, the four foundation of mindfulness, is to help you to develop the wisdom to free, so that you don't have to hold on to that mind. So that mind is the mundane mind, not your true mind. The true mind, lu lu bu dong. The true mind never stir, never create anything. It's just that nature. That's why I understand that you have that nature. But it doesn't belong to you, understand? No? But you are connected to that nature. Every form of mind that comes has the gateway to connect. And you can realize that. When you realize that, then you will understand everything. That's why the moment you are mindful, stabilize it to ever mindful, then use it to cultivate noble eightfold path. Then you will become heedful. And the moment you become heedful, you never die. The heedful never die. That's why heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. And the heedless are as if dead. So always remember, only wisdom free. Then you have to train your mind to be heedful first, before you can progress and develop the wisdom. So don't get this wrong. Because a lot of cultivators, I realize, they didn't have the understanding that it's wisdom that free their mind. They thought the so-called vipassana, jhana, and special meditation. That one cannot give rise to wisdom if you don't know how to develop the silent mind to insight into phenomena, and to silently observe and develop the understanding and the wisdom. So this is very important understanding. Okay, Manyan, read on.
Note, Tata means thus in Sanskrit and Pali, and Buddhists think this refers to what is called reality as it is, Yata Buddha. This reality is also referred to as thusness or suchness and Tathata in Pali, indicating what is or the isness of things. A Buddha or an Arahant is defined as someone who knows and sees reality as it is, Yata Buddha Nana Dasana. Gata Gon is the past passive participle of the verbal root gam, go, travel. Agata Kam is the past passive participle of the verb meaning come, arrive. Thus, in this interpretation, Tata Gata means literally either the one who has gone to suchness or the one who has arrived at suchness. Part 2, Heart Sutra, Lesson 7, 2.1. The Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there are no impediments, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind, ultimately Nirvana. Here, distorted dream thinking means delusion, conditioned inverted thinking, that is taking the unreal to be real and vice versa. The verse is so beautiful.
So you also must understand that this word inverted thinking is a Mandarin word, understand or not? You all know the word that Mahayana uses, tian dao. Huh? You heard of tian dao, isn't it? Means inverted view. You always got it mixed up. Huh? You take the real to be unreal, and the unreal to be real. Impermanent as permanent. And everything that is logical, you think is the truth. But it's not necessarily the case. And most of the time, whatever that is logical is not the truth. Okay? Because these are mundane logic. From the mind it arises. That's why it cannot penetrate the mind that is beyond thought, beyond time. So all this understanding very important. So distorted dream thinking means delusional or delusion condition your inverted thinking. Okay, read on, Manya.
2.2. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Samyak Sambuddhi through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Therefore, know that Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken. You recite it like this, Gate Gate Para Gate Parasam Gate Buddhisoha. Here, Prajna Paramita means the perfection of wisdom cultivation, and Anuttara Samyak Sambuddhi means the perfection of Buddhahood. This is even more beautiful. 2.3. True emptiness is wonderful existence. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, feeling, perception, mental activities or consciousness, no eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body or mind, no sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile and mental forms, no view of the eyes up to and including no view of mind consciousness, and no ignorance or ending of ignorance up to and including no old age and death or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no cause of arising of suffering, no extinction of suffering, and no noble eightfold way, and no understanding and attaining. This verse appears like very contradictory to normally taught Dharma, hence the beauty and uniqueness of the Heart Sutra. Reason why it is always expressed as true emptiness is wonderful existence, that is, when one is able to understand the profound true emptiness as taught in the Heart Sutra, then existence or life becomes wonderful and very meaningful and beautiful. Hence, there is no contradiction because on the one side is taught the conditioned Dhamma within the conditioned world. Then there is the realization of the unconditioned Dhamma, which is the understanding of true emptiness as taught by the Heart Sutra. The unconditioned Dhamma, as explained by the Buddha, is beyond thoughts and beyond time, hence no words, no concepts, no ideas, and no this and no that, which imply cannot be spoken or expressed like the great Tao. Part 3, Meditation, 3.1. Review on compilation of emails, understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Brother Teo conducted a review on the compilation of emails notes as written by him to various Buddhist groups and Dharma friends in the early years with the title, Understanding the Buddha, Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha, so as to enable the cultivators of the Buddha Dharma to have a better understanding of the key important Dharma as constantly emphasized by the Buddha. They are, number one, importance of understanding Dhammapada verses 1, 2, and 183, verses 21, 22, and 23, and the Buddha's final advice to all the monks before his final parinibbana. These verses are classified under the words of wisdom of the Buddha immediately after the content, introduction, and acknowledgement sections. Number two, the importance of understanding the true significance of the Four Noble Truths as expressed by the Buddha as the equivalent to the handful of leaves as emphasized by him at Konzambi in the Simsampa Grove over 2,500 years ago to the monks. This is to enable them to stay focused in their cultivation. Otherwise, the chances of deviation are very high and probable. Number three, the importance of understanding what is meditation, as explained under email number two and three. Number four, the importance of developing the three types of corresponding wisdom of Suttamayapanya, Cittamayapanya, and Bhavanamayapanya that will arise while cultivating the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha via his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, email number four.
Okay, this one is a photostat copy in A4 paper. Yeah, these are the initial email that I wrote to all the various Buddhist organizations all over the world. Yeah. And I finally end up in the United States of America. There is a Theravada monk. I think he got a group of Dhamma practitioner and seeker. Then they were arguing over all the various type of Buddhist understanding and concept. Then I find it quite interesting. That's why I add in and share with them. Then my Kayamita realized that all this email that I replied was so good, so penetrative, so useful. That's why they advised me to compile them all and make it into a book with the title Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. Yeah. So if you want, you can go to the website. There is an e-copy. But I hope you can find a copy or two at the back there. I don't know whether I bring or not. But Pat Masuri bring a lot of books. I don't know what are those books. Anyway, you can try your chance. Read on, Manyan.
8 Heart Sutra Class, Part 1.1. Can you teach me how to meditate? Brother Teo answered, this is the most common question, but also the most common mistake, because it is the wrong question to ask. When you ask this question, you expect the teacher or instructor to give you a method and a technique to meditate, right? And this sounds very logical, isn't it? But what is a method? It is only a series of instructions to do certain things right, like training the mind to be mindful and heedful so that it is in the present moment, silent, peaceful and aware within, or to train the mind to develop concentration, etc. And more often than not, the method or technique taught never defines the meditation. So isn't it more important to understand what is meditation? Only then do we know how to develop it. So whatever that appears logical may not necessarily be the truth or right question to ask. Note, unless you understand what meditation is, you will not be able to develop it. All methods and techniques given are only an initial skillful means meant to help train the mind to be heedful or in concentration. They are only a series of instructions given to initially train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought or preoccupied with what it is thinking or feeling. The purpose of meditation is to train the mind to be heedful, then to use it to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom and to understand how the five mental hindrances can hinder your mind from returning to its original state of silent inner awareness and peace before its stirring. Do not fight the mental hindrances or force it to go away, because instead just develop the corresponding five spiritual faculties of mind, especially sati and samadhi, as taught by the Buddha, to arise the wisdom to counter them. For the Dharma is beyond thought and beyond time. Heedfulness is without thought, hence without psychological time. Brother Teo always advised us to diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties because they are keys to the development of the 37 states of enlightenment.
Factors of enlightenment.
They appeared twice within the 37 factors of enlightenment. 1.2. Can chanting itself bring about enlightenment? Question 2. What about those who believe in chanting? Can chanting itself bring about enlightenment? Brother Teo answered, yes, it can, provided you know how to chant with very strong faith, clear mindfulness and understanding. For it can also bring about the cultivation of the five spiritual faculties of mind, sadha, virya, sati, samadhi and panya, leading to the enlightenment. So don't be rigid or dogmatic to simply comment when you still cannot understand other people's practices or cultivation, especially those of the Mahayana and the Pure Land traditions. Their Buddhas and their great Bodhisattva vows are very powerful, and they can help those who are sincere to connect to their vows and enabling them to develop their cultivation so much faster. Whatever you do in life, and if you know how to develop it with understanding, then it can bring about a transformation too, for life itself is the meditation, via the cultivation of the daily mindfulness, which is the cultivation of sati sampajana. 1.3. Wisdom of Ajahn Yantra. Some important truths that Brother Teo has learned from his teacher, Pra Ajahn Yantra Amaro Bhikkhu, a very wise and famous Thai monk during the early years of his cultivation, 1988 to 1992, are as follows. Number one, mind is mind, body is body, body is never the mind, and the mind is never the body. But body is important too, because both body and mind must harmonize to help us live life and develop the meditation, and we choose take care of mind because mind is more important. Number two, we choose accept everything as natural because only form and mind arising and passing away, and mighty nature rolling by, so not so real and not what one thinks. Number three.
So this part, mighty nature rolling by, following the Panchayanayama is very important. So all this phenomenal world of consciousness, evolution, existence, dependent on condition, causes and condition, they arise and they pass away, they evolve. So what is happening is, it's like there is nature, mighty nature, with its causes and conditions, managing this movement. That's why my teacher said, we choose accept everything as natural, means suchness. Like the Buddha said, condition like that, things will be like that. Whatever arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So when you understand this, then your mind becomes different. When you can choose accept everything as natural, then you are always at peace. Thing is just the way it is, understand? Only mighty nature rolling by. No reality. That's why think also like that, don't think also like that. Because the mundane creation through the mundane mind, through the delusion, manifests all this arising and passing away of phenomena, the existential world. So contemplate and reflect. That's why I learned from him a lot. These are the things he told me in the early years. I met him in 1986. Then later on, I think, I learned from him in the year 88, 89. Okay, continue.
Number 3. We choose contemplate all Dharma until they are very, very clear. Importance of second turning wisdom. Number 4. The highest or real meditation. We choose aware of all actions and all movements in the present moment. Daily mindfulness meditation in daily life.
This is the most important. Because when he told me that this is the highest meditation, I got a shock. Because initially, I was expecting some fantastic definition of meditation. Then, the moment he said this, like anti-climax, suddenly, just like that. And that is the highest meditation. Like, you got nothing to show people, no magic, nothing. We choose aware of all action, movement in the present moment. You dare to believe and do, or not? Yeah. But I dare, Then I check. Hey, I hardly even can manage 5 minutes of continuous awareness or mindfulness. Throughout the day, within 24 hours. Can't even do it for 5 minutes. But I realize the mundane mind, split second is gone. Split second is gone. Because this one, the habitual thinking, the what they call sankhara activity and movement, they are so heedless. And without the stability or spiritual faculty, I cannot do anything. I can only use anapanasati, the continuous mindfulness, to stabilize it. If I do that, it's a conditioned state, but I can be mindful most of the time. But that is not the real sati. That is not the real free mind. That is in the state of collectedness and unwavering. That is not a free mind. That's why after that, I heard this, I reverse my cultivation. I come out from the deep, continuous mindfulness or anapanasati. I release it up to normal upacara samadhi, means not in apana samadhi. Then I use it to develop the daily mindfulness until the daily mindfulness comes. And within 2 weeks, it comes. Then the moment it comes, the rest is history. I saw it so beautiful. When the daily mindfulness arises, I realize my true mind. I understand that nature, everything. Then from there, the Dhamma become very clear to me. Yeah. Then because of my past cultivation, everything falls into place. That's why without sati, you are as if dead. Without sati, there is no heedfulness. You cannot be in the state of ever mindful, constantly meditative. So daily mindfulness is key. Training your mind to be aware, stabilize it is key. Okay? Read on.
Number 5. Importance of having a good daily religious routine to train the mind to cultivate puja, metta, sati and meditate every day. Number 6. Importance of constantly cultivating the 5 spiritual faculties of mind and the keeping of the 5 precepts. Number 7. Nature has great loving kindness. Nature just gives, gives and gives. The air we breathe, the water we drink and the food we consume all come from nature. 1.4. Key to understanding meditation. The key to understanding meditation is to understand that the body and mind must harmonize and be in a constant state
of relaxed inner awareness to develop the meditation.
And because the mind is trapped inside this physical body of ours due to our karmic conditioning, so whatever the body experiences, the mind will also experience them through its mental consciousness. This is the reason why the form and mind can experience suffering conditioned by one's karma if wisdom is not developed as yet. To truly become enlightened, one must have the understanding to transcend birth and death of this segmented life of ours. The famous quotes by Venerable Master Guan Qing are, "Guo qi xing bu ke de," the past is already gone, so not a reality anymore. "Wei lai xing ye bu ke de," the future has yet to come, so it is also not a reality. And "Xian jai xing ye bu ke de," the present moment cannot also be held onto because of its transient nature. Hence, it is also not a reality too, even though it is the highest in life or within existence, because the moment you know or experience it, it is already dead and gone, hence no longer the present moment. So in order to transcend life and birth and death, one must transcend even the present moment, which is still within existence and life itself. To transcend life, we must meditate to realize the cessation of form and mind, Nibbana, which is the unconditioned. As we all know, the moment is the only apparent reality in life, and as real as it can be, it is just a moment. The very next moment, it is already dead and gone, and no more, and the next moment arises and passes away again and again. Hence, impermanent, empty, and not so real, or anatta. So how real can life be? 1.5. Understanding life. So moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? The problem of living beings is they are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life most of the time. So much so they totally miss out on life, i.e. they are never with the moment to fully live and experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. Instead, they only existed through life. They are conscious but hardly mindful or aware. So learn to live life and not to worry about life. Part 2, Heart Sutra Lesson 8, 2.1, Master Xionghua's 8-line verse. Brother Teo just briefly went through it because it is not important. Below is Master Xionghua's 8-line verse, which Brother Teo advised us to read through before discussing them during the next Heart Sutra class. Number 1. Wonderful wisdom can reach the other shore right now. Number 2. The true mind itself can merge with enlightenment's source. Number 3. Dharma and analogy comprise its title, which transcends the relative. Number 4. Empty of the characteristics of all Dharma is this substance beyond words. Number 5. Fundamental non-attachment is its purpose and intent. Number 6. And by using its power of eradication, the 3 obstacles are cleansed away. Number 7. The Patta division is determined to be the meaning of this teaching.
Okay, wait, I have to explain the number 2. The true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. That's why Master Xianhua also know. So what is this true mind? The pure awareness nature, right? That's why the true mind. This one, Xianhua also know, can merge with the true nature. So this understanding, only Bodhisattva who has gone through it can understand. Because this true mind, you can seize it. When the mundane mind realizes itself, develops the wisdom, then you have the causes and conditions to go into what we call the realization of Nibbana. But the funny part of this realization of Nibbana is nobody realized, understand or not? You understand or not? Nobody attained Nibbana, understand or not? But the mundane mind that realizes itself and sees brings about the condition for Nibbana to arise. And Nibbana is the unconditioned. You cannot talk about it. So because of that, when this mundane mind realizes itself and sees, then the wisdom that is embodied create the causes and conditions for Nibbana to arise. And for Nibbana to arise, this form and mind cease. The pure awareness nature also must cease. Because with this, you cannot go in, understand not? But when this one sees, through wisdom, born of this enlightenment or cultivation that the Buddha has taught us, then the condition that manifests Nibbana, condition this to cease, understand not? That's how it merges. Then when it merges, it's not like this one merges with this one. No, this one ceases. And the form and mind that go through this process realizes Nibbana. But it's not the being, understand not? It's the understanding and the wisdom that bring about the causes and conditions for the realization of Nibbana. That's why Nibbana is not what you think. You cannot like see you in Nibbana. Can see you in Nibbana. I saw one book, no? See you in Nibbana. Because Nibbana is not something that you can describe and talk about. It's unconditioned. And that thing can only happen when you have the realization, when this caused the condition for it to manifest. Then when it manifests, this one also will cease. Otherwise, this one cannot cease. Understand not? But this one is the primordial. It's already inside there. Understand not? And this is needed to arise the thinking mind, the thought. But when Nibbana sets in, then it becomes a condition for this to cease and this to cease, then emerge. That's a Xuanhua no. So this part is based on Xuanhua's the 8th verse, 8 line verse. So true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. He called it the source. It is actually that oneness nature. That's why this one, people give a lot of names to it. Some call it the unconditioned, the oneness nature, the original nature, the true nature, or whatever. Okay, you read on.
Number 8, a maha turning around. This is the prashna board. Part 3, meditation. 3.1, 6 hours meditation practice. While reviewing email number 3, what is meditation? Part 2. Brother Teo came across the 6 hours meditation practice as mentioned by one of the participants, and Brother Teo has so kindly explained the 6 hours practices to us as below. The monk that introduces these 6-hour practices is quite a good monk, and his 6-hour method or technique, which he also sometimes termed it as a form of right effort, is quite useful and good if used as an initial skillful means to train and relax the mind. But as in many instances, they thought the 6-hour is the meditation, hence the problem. This is also the reason why every time when they are doing the 6-hour, they thought they are meditating. Anyway, the 6 R's as mentioned consists of the following. First R is recognize. To recognize that your mind has been distracted by a distraction, which may be a pain, a wandering thought or a tension, itchiness or numbness within your body, manifesting as tactile consciousness or at one of the other sense door consciousness. Second R is release, to release the mind from the distraction and letting it be without clinging on or reacting to it. Third R is relax, to relax the tension or tightness or stress within caused by craving in your forehead where there is like a membrane that is being tightened. Fourth R is re-smile. This is to relax the body and mind of all tension and stress within. When you smile, you relax because in order to smile genuinely, there must be a relaxed state of joy and happiness. Fifth R is return, to return to the cultivation of Anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, to train the mundane mind to develop a stable mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Sixth R is repeat, to repeat the above six R training. Please note that the number six step involves a lot of repeated doing by the thought, hence very mechanical or repetitive, leading to thought-based meditation. If one clings onto the doing, without understanding what meditation is, so a better way will be to replace the six R with meditation via the trained mind in silent awareness instead of repeat. This will help improve and refine upon the 6R to make it a lot better and much more useful. Similarly, step number 5 can be stopped once the mind is already trained until it has entered sati. Note that steps number 3 and 4 are very similar to our mind sweeping method and metta used to train and relax our mind to decondition one's heedless thinking. So basically, the 6R can be very useful initial skillful means to train and relax the mind and to decondition one's heedless thinking. Notes: have an open mind. When people share with us their understanding, we should appreciate and have mutual respect for each other's understanding. No more trying to be right or arise any unnecessary argument that can lead to disharmony and misunderstanding. Avoid all division and negativities. Pure actions are actions performed without any evil roots or evil motive. When you want to do good or generosity to get merits, and your action is out of getting merits or greed for that merit, it is really not a pure action, and it will end up with no true merits, for true merits are born of pure actions that are free of all evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion.
That's why the fifth Paitreya says tinted merit, Anasana, not the pure merits. Okay, read on.
Nine Heart Sutra class 1.1, seven factors of enlightenment. Within the 37 factors of enlightenment, there are seven main factors of enlightenment called Satta Bhujanga, as taught by the Buddha, and they are, number 1, sati or mindfulness, silent inner awareness before the knowing, is the first factor of enlightenment, and it is also one of the five spiritual faculties. For sati is life, and without sati there is no heedfulness, hence no life, because heedless are as if dead. Also, without sati there is no heedfulness or the silent mind in pure awareness to investigate the Dhamma and to see the mental intentions behind all our actions, speech and thought processes. Number 2, Dhamma Vichaya or Dhamma investigation is the second factor of enlightenment. Only with sati is there the ability to investigate the Dhamma with the silent mind. When the Dhamma stands up to investigation, the faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching will be strengthened, giving rise to virya. Number 3, virya or spiritual tenacity or energy or zeal is the third factor of enlightenment that will drive your meditation. Then, number 4, piti, the spiritual joy or calmness, which is the fourth factor of enlightenment, will arise. Number 5, followed by paucity or tranquility and stillness of mind, which is the fifth factor of enlightenment. This is the silent mind in sati, or mind has entered sati. 6. Samadhi, the collected and unwavering mind, which is the sixth factor of enlightenment, will arise once pasati and sati have stabilized. 7. Upekkha, or equanimity, of all mental formations, born of wisdom, is the last of the seven factors of enlightenment, and it will arise once sati and samadhi have stabilized, to enable one to see things as they are, leading to all the wisdom of panya, which is also the last of the five spiritual faculties. These karmically conditioned five aggregates of form and mind, or this cemental human being, which you all call Brother Teo, is not me, but just only a tool and vehicle for me to come to this existential world, and for me to make use of, to live and experience life to the fullest, etc. This form or physical body of mind is similar to the functional body of Lord Buddha, called Nimanakaya, that performed the function of the Buddha 2,500 plus years ago. When he became enlightened underneath the Bodhi tree, his spiritual nature or perfection body, called the Sambhogaya Kaya, came back to him, and then they combined to make him the Sammasambuddha, while arising the third transformed body called Dhammakaya, that enabled him to speak and proclaim the Dhamma. So after understanding all this, you should not cling on to these karmically conditioned five aggregates of form and mind so deludedly anymore. And the next time when you argue with your friend or your wife, husband, you will understand that it is just one form and mind with its bundles of memories and its conditionings, views and opinions, etc., arguing with another form and mind, so not so real and not what you think. If you deludedly cling or grasp onto the five aggregates of this form and mind as the I and the me, then you will have what the Buddha called self-delusion or sakkaya-ditti. Self-delusion or wrong view with regards to the self will condition your egoic mind and personality to arise, leading to all your selfishness and possessiveness, to own, cling, grasp and possess things, wanting things your way, etc., thereby arising the whole mass of suffering. The Buddha gave five very good analogies to clearly explain the empty nature of these five aggregates of form and mind. He said, your physical body or form aggregates is like a foam. Appears so solid, but not so, because if you leave the foam for a while, it's gone after a while. And the feeling aggregate is just like a bubble, arises and passes away so fast. Then the aggregate of perception is just like a mirage you see in the desert, appears so real from afar, but you will realize that it's just a mirage when you come near to it. Then the aggregate of sankhara, or thinking activities of mind, is like peeling a banana tree stem. Layer after layer you peel, finally at the core of it, it is empty, i.e. sabbe sankhara anicca and anatta. Lastly, the Buddha said, your aggregate of vijnana or consciousness is just like a magician. A magician is also called an illusionist who creates illusion for you to see. Hence, the reason why the Mahayana always said that this world of ours is an illusionary world, a world of consciousness only. So, not so real and not what you think. Do wake up and do not be deluded anymore.
So this one is very interesting. Sankara, what is the analogy that the Buddha gave? It's like peeling the banana stem. How many of you have done it? I did it when I was in the primary school. Well, I was asked to do the art subject. So I need to cut the banana stem, then chop on the drawing. Then I curious, when I saw, I got so interested. Then I peel, layer after layer. Then I realized, at the center, nothing, empty. That is the meaning why I say, think also like that, don't think also like that. Understand? Because Sankara, the analogy is like the banana stem. You think, plan, and you come up with all the what they call analysis, trying to be right and wrong, justification, like Amy say. Then all the planning, scheming, all those things, ultimately empty, understand? Not so real, not what you think. You yourself don't exist. Then how can other thing exist, understand? Well, it's just a nature's condition. That's why my teacher say, mighty nature rolling by. So when you understand all this, then you will not waste your time to go and do the unnecessary analysis, thinking or reasoning. Don't try to be right and all this thing. But always remember, you live in a conditioned world. You cannot be like completely out of the system. You have to develop the ultimate suchness seeing or wisdom. And that is the third level of seeing. Understand? No? Kan san, yu su san. Means when you meet the enlightened one, kan san, pu su san. Yes, agree. You meet the deluded one, kan san, su san. Ah, san. That's why you got no problem. Understand? No? Suchness seeing means, although duality not like that. You know what my classmate told me, they know I meditate. No? Then sometimes during the sharing, I say, not what you think on, everything not so real on. Then you know what he said, no? Not real. Hey, your money, give me lah. So how? Huh? He is more smart. Not real doesn't mean I have to give you. Because all these are the conditions arising on. And like the Buddha say, there are four types of happiness that you can arise as a lay person. The first type of happiness is what? Huh? The happiness of able to earn that living, understand, or that salary through the righteous way. So first time you get your salary, you happy or not? I very happy, you know. I plan to belanja people, but not much money at that time. But I was full of joy, you know. Because first time I came out to work and developed the ability to make money. Yeah. Then what is the second type of joy? No, third one, that one. Loan free is third one. Second one is when you have the ability to have wealth, all this ability, you must develop the joy to making use of it for the benefit of yourself, your loved one, and whoever that have affinity with you and you want to help. That's why that type of joy you must use. Then I told my father, you cannot understand. When you understand, you know money, although not real, but useful. And I got another colleague or friend, also Dharma friend, he used to tell me, he said, Virtue, I like your Dhamma. He said, I like the way you explain things. He said, but I also have something to share with you. He said, through his experience. Yeah, he also successful, wealthy. He said, whatever problem we have in this world, if money can solve, is it a problem? Because money is not a problem to him. So whatever can resolve, you must have the ability to understand. Use it, understand? That's why the Buddha, under the third happiness and the fourth happiness, he say, when you are without loan, you have one type of happiness and joy. There are no more problem with financial thing. Then those who borrow from loan shark cannot pay, you know what is the problem. So live a life that is free from debt. That is good advice. Then the last one is best. Is it live a blameless life so that the wise one don't blame you. Understand? So if money can resolve, be generous. Understand? When there is an accident, like when my daughter came back from Singapore, he tried to learn to drive my car, very long time didn't drive. So he took us to Atria. Then when she was driving, got one vehicle, four-wheel drive. No? I tell you, you may, with the mundane thinking, how can this guy be so healer? He just turned, didn't even want to know that there is a car in front of, and cannot brake, no, bang into my daughter's car. And you know what happened? I just came down and looked at him and said, next time be careful. Don't do this. Because money can solve the problem. And I can do my own repair. If I argue with him, hey, you at the wrong, no? You simply turn. You cannot turn on. And you never look that this is a traffic that we pass. The car that goes straight has priority over you. Then there is a white line and other things. So of course he says sorry. Yeah? But for me, I don't want to confront him and make him look stupid and miserable. I just tell him next time be careful, resolve. Then move on. I don't even want him to pay. Understand? I do the repair myself. Then I told Sui, never mind. Let things be. She learned after that. long time didn't drive. Sure, kena. So if a lot of things, small matter, if money can resolve, you can afford it, why you want to make a fuss of it? Why you want to make life so difficult for people? You talk about principle, moral, all those things. All these are from the mundane mind, that has all this ideology, or views, opinion, and conditioning. So from there you act, you create suffering, unnecessary misunderstanding and conflict. So remember this, whatever money can resolve, you can afford it, then it's not a real problem. Just settle it, resolve it. Okay, Manya, continue.
2.1, the three karmic obstacles. Be aware of the three karmic obstacles. And according to Master Xiong Hua, eradication is what the Heart Sutra is capable of doing, i.e. doing away with the three obstacles, the retribution obstacle, the activity obstacle, and the affliction obstacle. Number one, retribution obstacle. There are two types. Primary retribution implies karmically conditioned physical body, like the type of DNA coding the physical experiences,
appearances,
etc. B. Dependent retribution implies karmically conditioned living conditions or your materialistic inheritance, i.e. born poor or born rich, and where you are born into. You don't have a choice because it is a dependent retribution, but who you marry to, you do have a choice.
Do you understand? Who you marry to, important. Don't take care of karma without wisdom. You can get yourself in trouble. They say the most dangerous thing is to marry the wrong guy. He can create hell for you and make life really difficult for you. So, karma-wise, you got no choice, Your karma take you here. That's why primary retribution, your DNA, you cannot complain. Then, dependent retribution, you also cannot complain. Why I am not Bill Gates' son. Then you say, last time my mother doesn't know how to tackle Bill Gates. If tackle Bill Gates, I Bill Gates' son. You think so easier. So all this, you must understand. But who you marry, you have a choice. You do have a choice. But the funny thing is, karmic debt, you have to pay. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. What you do to people, you end up become the victim. That's why you finally, you think you choose, but you never really choose. Well, karmically, that karmic repercussion come and decide for you. And you end up marrying somebody who come after you for your karmic debt. Oh, that one miserable. And sometimes you give birth to your children. You know what happened? They are your karmic, 什么债主啊，什么冤亲债主啊。 They come and demand back the karmic debt, no? But because you are the father or the mother, you willingly let them abuse your wealth and all those things. You know, last time you plunder them, deceive them, cheat them. Now they come back karmically conditioned, become your children. Then you end up saying, what, no? What can I do? He is my son. So all this, when you understand the Dhamma, the law of karma, is very interesting, and you can avoid them. Mm. Okay, another 2 minutes. You better go a bit fast.
Number two, activity obstacle implies karmically conditioned livelihood obstacles, like you have a lot of karmic obstructions while working and living your life. Number three, affliction obstacle implies karmically conditioned affliction caused by your heedlessness in life. That is, whenever you speak or think with an evil mind that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then affliction or suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hoof. Then Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course. If you want to be happy, then be heedful to train your mind to act, speak, and think without the three evil roots. Then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. Dhammapada verse 2 will then take its course. Don't blame anybody for your afflictions, for according to the Buddha, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So do strive on with heedfulness to take care of your karma, so that your life is taken care of. Do not be heedless. Have goodness and kindness, for you reap what you sow. What you do to others, karmically it will come back to you. So if you are good and kind to others, karmically others will be good and kind to you, because these are your karmic inheritance. The absence of evil is good, so don't try to be good, but instead just train your mind to be heedful or mindful, so that it is incapable of evil, then naturally you will be good. Those who have cultivated the Noble Eightfold Path have no evil, but only wisdom and virtue.
Very good, sadhu. So we stop here. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so now maybe we can do some chanting. Today, what you all want to request? I think we get Engbi to chant the Karaniya. Is it the Karaniya Metta Sutta? Manyuan, pass the mic to Engbi.
The normal chanting book, page 12. Not the retreat version. Retreat version got.
Or you can also chant the Maha Mangala Sutta, page 54. Page 54. Karaniya is 52, yeah. Or maybe both. Chant both. Thank you. So this one, I think, will be very soothing. Because all those devas up here, up there, they still can remember. To us, it's 2,600 years. But to them, it's how long? Huh? One day up there is how long on earth? 50 years, isn't it? So 2,600 is only 52 days, according to Sui An. So still very fresh in their memory. That's why sometimes at retreat, you know, they want to listen to all this. And they rejoice. They really rejoice. Okay, we chant. And also very meaningful, the discourse on loving kindness.
Karaniya Metta Sutta. Karaniya Metta Kusalena Yang Thang Santang Padang Abhisamecha Sakko Ujuja Sujuja Suvajo Chasamudu Anadimani Santu Sakko Cha Subharo Cha Apakicho Cha Salahukavutti Santindriyo ca nipako ca appagabho kulesu ananugiddho na ca kuddhaṃ samācare kinci yena viññō pare upavadeyyum sukino va khemino hontu sabbe sattha bhavantu sukitattha ye kechi pāna bhūtatthi tasāvata varāva anavasesa Digavaye mahantava majjimarasakanukatula Dittavayeva adhithaye chadure vasanti avidure Bhutava sambhavesi vasabbe satta bhavantu sukitatta na paro parang nikubheta nati manyeta katta chinang kanchi Vyāro-sa-nāpati-ga-sanya-nānya-manya-sa-dukkha-mi-cheya Mātāya-dhāniyāṁ-puttaṁ-āyusā-eka-putta-manurākhe Evaṁ pisabha-bhūtesu manasaṁ bhāvaye aparimānaṁ Mettāñca sabba lokasmiṁ manasaṁ bhāvaye aparimānaṁ Uddhaṃ adocha tiriyañca asaṃ bādhaṃ averaṃ asapatthaṃ Tithaṃ charaṃ nisinnova sayanova yavatassa vigatamiddho Etaṃ satiṃ aditheya brahma metaṃ viharaṃ idamāhu Dittiṃ ca anupagamma sīlavā dassanena sampanno Kāme suvineya gedaṃ Nahi jatu gabba seyyam punaretiti Etena sacca vajjena sotite hotu sabbada Etena sacca vajjena sabba rogo vinasatu Etena sacca vajjena hotu te jaya mangalam
Discourse on the highest blessing. This one also very good because during the Buddha's time there was a devas on behalf of the devas. They came and asked the Buddha, what constitutes the highest blessing? That's why this Mangala Sutta is on the highest blessing. Now we let MB recite. Then if you want to understand, you'll read the English translation. and ask yourself how many of these you have developed so that you can have the highest blessing. That will tell very clearly what your past karmic is. And the first time when I saw this sutta, when I read it, you know what happened? I was shocked. No? How come everyone and there is described there? I already realize it and have it. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's why this life, my nature karma, like very blessed one. No? Everything go the way it's supposed to be. And like I say, I didn't do anything. I just accord and flow. So what happened is, all of this has been developed with understanding through my vows, through my aditan and all those things. That's why all this can happen. So understanding is very important. Okay, now we chant. Yeah.
Maha Mangala Sutta discourse on the highest blessings. Evaṃ me sutaṃ ekaṃ samayaṃ bhagavā savattiyaṃ viharati jetavane anāta pindikassa ārāme Atakho anyatara devata abekhantaya ratiya abekhantavanna kevalakappang jetavanang obhasetva Yena bhagavate nupasankami upasankami tva bhagavantam abhivade tva ekamantam attasi Ekamantang Thithakho Sadevata Bhagavantang Gathaya Ajabhasi Bahudeva Manusacha Mangalani Achintayung Akankamana Sothanang Bruhi Mangalamuttamang Asevanacha Balanang Panditanancha Sevana Pujacha Pujaniyanang Etang Mangalamuttamang Patirupadesavasocha Pubbecha Katapunyata Atta sammapanidicha etang mangalamuttamang Bahusacchancha sippancha vinayocha susikhito Subhasita chaya vacha etang mangalamuttamang Mata pitu upathanang putta darasa sangaho Anakulacha khammanta etang mangalamuttamang Dhanancha dhammachariyacha nyatakanancha sangaho Anavajjani kammani etang mangalamuttamang Arati virati papa majjapana ca sanyamo appamado ca dhammesu etang mangalamuttamang garavo ca nivato ca santuti ca katanyuta kalena dhamma savanam etang mangalamuttamam kanti ca sovacassata samananam ca dasanam kalena dhamma sakaccha etang mangalamuttamam tapo ca brahmacariyan ca ariya sacchana dasanam nibbana sacchikiriya ca etang mangalamuttamam puttassa loka dhammehi citta tang yasana kampati asokam virajang khemam etang mangalamuttamam etadisani katvana sabbattamaparajita sabbatta tinggacchanti tang te sang mangalamuttamanti etena sacca vajena hotu te jaya mangalam etena sacca vajjena hotu te jaya mangalam etena sacca vajjena hotu te jaya mangalam sadhu sadhu sadhu.
Okay, thank you so much, Sister Amy, for the very good chanting. You all can feel the vibration, very different, the way she chant, and this is because she has this what they call past training. She liked the chanting, and this life come very natural to her, and she will develop it. That's why whatever you develop as skill in the past, then when you have the passion, it will come to you. Even musician, talented people, same. Then if you are a genuine cultivator and you like the Dhamma, this Dhamma thing will dawn on you. Then when you come, you pick up all these things very fast. That's why the law of karma, you have to believe and understand. You reap what you sow. Do you know why this life I come? I can understand all this and receive all this truth and transform so fast. First, of course, affinity with all the great beings and cultivator. The second one is my own karmic manifestation. Well, the way I share and the way I give is also very penetrative and very fast. So if you can give like that, when you come, you will receive them the same. That's why a lot of these so-called teacher or the guide that taught me, I never really learn the real teaching from them. I only need a small part of what they understand and need, that one. When I met them or when I hear the truth, I just understand and receive it. That's why it's so penetrative. So when you have the faith, when you have the sincerity, and you listen attentively, you can awaken. Yeah, this is the truth. The truth can be very, very potent and penetrative. That's why for those who have the past, they receive very fast, they awaken very fast. Even recently, you see the video, short video, the Dhamma website. So many people, I don't know, they just get interested and come. It cannot be for no reason they come. That's why you have your past, your affinity, and the causes and conditions behind. But some of you, when you come, you keen, and yet you cannot really understand and receive. It's because most likely, I use the word most likely, I'm not a Samasa Buddha, I cannot read your past and all this thing. But most likely, there is karmic obstruction. And karmic obstruction is not that negativity or karma or something that serious. No, no. It's just because when you are living your life as a cultivator, where you have different teaching coming to you, and you that time don't understand, but you become like very confident, then you go and promote that type of teaching, then you cause people to lost the way. And then when you come back, you will encounter those type of teaching. That's why you will go to that one first. Then that one is, you reap what you sow. That's why the coming obstruction will come. Then when you encounter the truth or the real Dhamma, you cannot break the karmic obstruction to receive it, because you have not developed the understanding before. So all these are the causes and conditions behind. So what you must do is, that's why in the yellow card, the Bodhisattva way, I teach you all how to ask for forgiveness to break your karmic obstruction. That one very important. The most powerful one is to break the karmic obstruction that you do out to the triple gem. Then of course to all beings. Then finally is to ask for forgiveness from all beings, which you have knowingly or unknowingly caused suffering, misery, or create this karmic obstruction that is not covered under the tool that you have already developed. Asking for forgiveness is very important. The moment you do it, very strange, it will bring about the causes and conditions for you to break the karmic obstruction, where your sincerity give rise to the causes and conditions. That's why in the teaching, the Mahayana teaching, they always ask you to ask for forgiveness and do the repentance, chanhui. So, if you want to make progress, if you encounter and realize that you have a lot of this karmic obstruction coming to you and obstruct you from receiving, then give it a try. Ask for forgiveness sincerely. Then vow not to repeat all this wrong way again. We are following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. So if you do that, these two conditions will actually bring about the causes and conditions for you to break the karmic obstruction and continue with the right and appropriate cultivation. Then when you have this developed correctly, then you can invoke power of merits for turnaround, for whatever, to help yourself or others or your loved one, is up to you. So these three ways is very useful. Okay, now we better end. 9:38 already, okay. We share merit and transfer merit. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditoa chirang rakantu loka sasana ita vata cha mehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo devo asatu kalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko ibhina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, now you can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Sadhu.
Okay, dear, before we call it a day, shall we pay respect to our teacher, Bratio, and the Triple Gem? Bow. Bow. Bow.